It's been a shaky relationship at best for generations. How to change that? Bringing faith, race, and the LGBT community together here in Jacksonville. Good Monday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and we are always live on the radio at 9. Also, make sure to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Just ahead, how to bring these groups together, the faith community, the LGBT community. How is that going to happen? Well, it's happening at UNF. We'll tell you about it, and you can call us up now with your thoughts. 549-2937. Then later, how the historic East Side is responding to this city's gun violence. We'll tell you about We Rise. Plus, Culpepper will be along a little later in the hour as the Jaguars get barbecued in Kansas City over the weekend. All of that and more ahead this morning. But first this hour, they are two groups that notoriously don't always see eye to eye. The faith community and people who identify as LGBT. For example, here in Jacksonville, the long drawn out battle over updating this city's human rights ordinance to include LGBT people drew strong opposition from many church leaders. So it might seem surprising that at UNF this month, there's an effort to bring these groups together, and race is also part of the discussion. Faith, race, and LGBT, it's all part of Coming Out Week on the UNF campus. What's this all about? Here with more, Caitlin Legg, Director, and Matt Hartley, Associate Director of the UNF Interfaith Center. Good morning to you both.
Good morning, Melissa. Thank you for having us.
Great to be here. Thanks, Melissa.
And you know, there are a lot of faith communities in Jacksonville. Just over the weekend was a massive pride parade and celebration in Riverside Five Points to mark 40 years of pride. And so there are lots of people out there listening who might want to join this conversation. Give us a call right now, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online, send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org, tweets to @MelissaInJax, or let us know your thoughts on Facebook. Caitlin, before we talk about what's happening at UNF, I just want to take a minute to note that at the Pride Parade in Five Points Saturday, it was absolutely massive. It was a 40th anniversary celebration, and it had astounding corporate and mainstream support. Every major bank and hospital had a float in that parade. JSO had a presence in the parade. So in that sense, this city has come a long way from 1978, when the first Pride event was held in Riverside. So before we get into the discussion, I wanted to lead with that and get your thoughts about that.
Yeah, absolutely, Melissa. And I've actually lived in Jacksonville for just over 5 years. And in that 5 years, I have seen a huge change in the Pride Parade since when I started. I remember walking along the streets of Riverside in 2013 and looking around at empty streets and houses. And, you know, it was almost a little somber. And to see just the massive support and number of people out was astounding. And you hit the nail on the head with your mention of banks and other businesses and nonprofits. I think that we're seeing, it's interesting, we're at a time where LGBT equality is both mainstreaming, but mm-hmm. also we're still facing the day-to-day discrimination. So a lot of, I think, what we'll talk about today is trying to find that balance and really getting all stakeholders involved.
Getting them all involved, yeah. It's one thing to have the Wells Fargo horse and carriage mm-hmm. in the Pride Parade, which mm-hmm. was pretty amazing to see. But on the other hand, as you said, there are still lots of areas to work on in this society. Matt, tell me about what's happening this week at UNF. It's called Faith, Race, and LGBT, and this is on October 10th. What's happening?
So we have invited to campus through the funding of the, Caitlin, tell me, it's the LGBT Community
Fund? LGBT Community Fund for Northeast Florida.
That's right. So Dr. Reverend Jamie Washington is coming to share his talk on faith, race, and LGBT. And it's a conversation we've been having on UNF's campus for a number of years. The Interfaith Center and the LGBT Resource Center have been strong partners. And so we're excited about how Dr. Washington can further this discussion for us on campus.
Well, because you don't often think about these groups being on the same page. So what will be talked about?
Yeah, so we invited Dr. Washington to speak because we know that people of color and transgender folks are facing increased levels of discrimination. And we also know that their community, their heritage, their history, and their faith are very important to their well-being. Some data from the LGBT Fund's community survey backs this up. So something that was really fascinating was that 27% of members of the LGBT community reported being a member of a house of worship. But when you break that up and you look at African-American LGBT respondents, the number is over 50%. And so and African-American and Black individuals are facing discrimination, but they're also way more involved in their faith community. And so this is really relevant. And these different communities can come together to address some of these concerns in Jacksonville.
Okay. And Jacksonville is unfortunately the place where there has been a rash of murders of transgender women of color. So this can be deadly as well as an issue in someone's church or family or place of work. Are you going to talk about that aspect of this at the event?
I'm sure that will come up. Mm-hmm. You know, I think some people might be surprised but would be encouraged to know that in the response to some of those murders that there were faith leaders, LGBTQ faith leaders who were sharing and rallying to highlight these terrible things that are happening and to bring more light to them.
It's 549-2937, Faith, Race, and LGBT on the agenda this week at UNF. Did you go to the big Pride Parade over the weekend? There was a festival, too. Give us a call, 549-2937. Barbie is in Jacksonville. Hi, Barbie. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to make a comment. I'm a graduate of UNF. I taught at FSCJ for many years. I'm 73. I've been gay all of my life. And I have seen a lot of discrimination in the LBG community, and I just do not understand how people of faith of any type that say they believe in God, Jesus Christ, and so on and so forth can turn their nose up to anyone. You know, that's my comment. I don't understand how they think that they can judge other people.
Thanks, Barbie. Thanks for sharing your perspective on that. Okay, you know, we live in a world now where marriage equality is the law of the land, and a broad majority of American people are just fine with that. On the other hand, there's still a lot of discrimination out there, as we heard from her.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, the struggle with the marriage equality ruling is that we still have all these day-to-day issues of feelings of being scared or not understanding different communities. And I like to always focus on the movable middle. So when we're talking about persuasion, there's always going to be those outspoken folks who use either data or scripture to communicate what their message is, as opposed to whatever that larger meaning might be. Very much like what our caller in talked about. And so when we can focus on spreading knowledge and connecting with that movable middle, I think that's how we'll continue to make progress on these issues of racism and homophobia. And may have more say about that from the religious perspective.
Yeah, I think at UNF, we want students to know that LGBTQ and faith don't have to be an oppositional relationship. In fact, LGBTQ people are people of faith. And we have students on campus who are trying to make that connection. We had an event last Thursday where we were talking about coming out in the context of religion. And we had students who were saying, I'm trying to figure out who I am because I have this identity, but also I am religious.
And how to reconcile that. We had on the show recently this kid named Seth Owen, who's become well known because he graduated as his valedictorian from Pecan Park High School. No, he lives up in that area, a school up on the north side. And he's gay, and his parents essentially, basically kicked him out because he would not go to the church of their choice. And he said to them, I want to go to a church, just not this one, because it's so hostile to who I am. And so basically he ended up couch surfing, and through a GoFundMe account, won a lot of money to go to Georgetown University. He was on the Ellen Show just a week or two ago. So I think of him as an example of what you're talking about, as a young man who is a person who wants to have a spiritual practice, but wants to find a faith community that's accepting of him. Mm-hmm. And that can be difficult mm-hmm. for a lot of young people who aren't raised in an accepting faith environment.
Yeah, it can be difficult. And we get a lot of phone calls from community members who are either young people themselves or parents seeking LGBT affirming churches, synagogues, mosques, et cetera. And because they're looking for guidance, and to be able to send someone to a place that not just is neutral on it, but is able to affirm who they are and let them be who they authentically are in their community is so important. I think sometimes parents feel that they're doing the best for their kids when they enforce these very strict rules or guidelines or force them into churches who aren't as affirming. And the best thing that we can do is to accept our young people for who they are, to support them in that, even if we don't agree with it.
I think we have a minister on the line who has some thoughts about this. It's Ken in Riverside. Hi, Ken. Good morning.
Hello, Melissa.
Go ahead.
I'm calling because, yes, there is support in the Riverside community. I'm preaching now at Riverside Baptist Church, and I was in the parade. I participated on Saturday. It was a great time of joy and support and community among everybody that was there. I was delighted to be a part and represent the church, Riverside. We have LGBTQ members of our congregation. They are mainstream. They are important, and they are a part of our life and work. So there is that presence in Riverside, and we are an open, welcoming, and affirming congregation, and invite all of our friends at Riverside to participate with us.
Thanks, Ken. He's the pastor of Riverside Baptist Church. Thanks for that. Okay, Tom is on the west side. Go ahead, Tom. You're on the air.
Ah, yes. Good morning. Yes, I wanted to echo that sentiment. I've come from a evangelical tradition. And I participated in the parade, too. I saw some counter-protesters, and I pointed out that, the Bible tells us that we should love our neighbor as ourselves and leave judgment to God, and that's what I think we should all do.
Thanks, Tom. Yeah, there were a few protesters at the Pride event over the weekend, but such a sea change from how from people, in fact, that I know that have been involved with that for many years. It's just a completely different situation from how it used to be.
Absolutely. And I was talking to Matt about this. That's how you know you've made it big. When people are noticing and are out there counter-protesting, and I think it's important to note, too, that there were only a couple of folks who were counter-protesting. And so, again, it tends to be that really loud, vocal minority of people.
We're getting tweets, too, about the number of political candidates in the Pride Parade. There were several. Mm-hmm. Rob is in St. Augustine. Hi, Rob. Hello. Good morning.
Yes. Good morning, Mr. Melissa. How you doing?
Okay, thanks. How are you?
Yes, I'm doing fine. I was calling. I just wanted to make a quick comment with your first caller. It's not that Christians, because I'm a Christian, it's not that Christians are turning their nose up against the gay community. We love the person. It's just the sin that's being committed. It's not the person, so let's, you know.
Well, I know that you believe being gay is a sin, but, you know. I think the majority of Americans just don't feel that way anymore, Rob. They don't believe that someone's sexual orientation is a sin. They just believe that that's just who that person is. It's how they are. They can't help it. It's just their orientation, you know.
Right,
so.
And just quickly, right quick, again, Ms. Melissa, I just want to say, we love the person. Don't get it. You know, we love that person. But again, you know, but we love the person. I'll just leave it like that.
I understand that. I want to ask you both if this is coming up, if you're going to talk about this, because if people say that, I think that's That damages a lot of young LGBT people when they're told in their churches, we love you, but we hate your sin. Mm. To be told that who you are, your very nature, is sinful. I think that's caused a lot of harm to a lot of young people. Is that going to come up in this event?
I'm sure that Dr. Washington will address that, because it is a common refrain among religious groups. And I would much prefer a person who is kind in their approach to an LGBT person, even though they can't understand how that person lives. But I think that what our LGBT community really needs is our full affirmation and support.
Yeah, absolutely.
From religious leaders and from all people of faith.
Mm-hmm. But how do you, you're saying you're trying to reconcile these groups. How do you reconcile this? This, to me, is the irreconcilable point. If people truly believe that a gay or lesbian person is sinful, how do you get past that? Faith is not something that people can really sit and reason about. It's their faith. Mm-hmm. It's emotional for people. So how do you even get past that? I just don't understand how that's even possible.
I think one of the challenges, so this isn't a new argument at all. The idea that you can love the sinner but hate the sin. We've been having that conversation for a long time. And, you know, I don't come from a faith background, but I do understand what it's like to have made your mind up about how you feel about your values. And it can be very challenging to be open about that. And I think that in having this conversation, there needs to be an agreement on all sides of being open to hearing people's concerns and trying to find some sort of meeting in the middle. There are many organizations who are doing that work. Dr. Washington is involved with Many Voices, which is a Black church movement for LGBT people. There are folks within that group who have felt that way, that love the sinner, hate the sin, and have moved past that. So moving past that is possible. And, you know, I'd also like to note that generationally, we're already seeing this shift. There are some statistics out there now that show at least 20% of millennials and Generation Zers are identifying openly as LGBT. That is double what the guesses are for the general population. And so our young people are already becoming more accepting, even at the our folks who are like 30, 35. This change is coming, and faith communities definitely need to figure out how they fit into that.
Lori on the West Side. Hi, Lori.
Hi there. I, as a Bible reader and of a lot of the holy books of all of the religions, I just want to point out is that you can pick a religion, you can pick the book that you call as God-inspired, but there are so many contradictions in there, simply because it was written by people, and it's to teach both sides of anything. Now, we can run a, I'll give an example. In the Ten Commandments, it shalt not kill. Then you go to the Levitical books, and it says, except for kill them for this, kill them for that, kill them for this. Both can't be true.
Yeah, thanks, Lori. I appreciate that. And I think that she gets at the heart of this. In this country, there are still, and by the way, we're kind of alone among Western countries in the high number of people who take the Bible, the document of the Bible, literally, as opposed to looking at it in a more holistic, big picture way. Mm-hmm. Taking the word in the Bible literally, and ignoring, as she pointed out, the many places in which it contradicts itself. Mm. And so this is just a uniquely American phenomenon among industrialized Western nations.
And I appreciate that she brought up the religious diversity, too, because this issue of faith and LGBTQ isn't just a matter for Christians. Of course, you know, in Jacksonville, we're talking about it mainly in Christian terms because that's our majority population, but this is being dealt with in Jewish communities and Muslim communities, and they're dealing with that same issue of how do we reinterpret our scriptures and our tradition to create a sense of welcome. And so it's a conversation that's cutting across religions.
Lindsay in Jacksonville. Hi, Lindsay.
Hi, Melissa.
Go ahead.
Hi, I just wanted to call. I worked with the mom hugs, the free hugs and free mom hugs group and the parade, and I just wanted to say how full my heart was after that experience, just being able to meet so many people and offer love and support no matter what, showing them that we were there for them, you know, just for love, to love on them when other people won't.
Thanks for that. Yeah, I saw those signs too. Mm-hmm. Thanks for that. Mimi in Riverside. Hi, Mimi.
Hi. I just wanted to comment on the gentleman who called in about love the person, not the hate the, I don't even know the thing. Hate the sin, love the sinner. Talking about LGBT and what I can't ever understand is why we don't apply the same things to people that suffer from gluttony or who have been divorced, or we pick this one group to ostracize, and it just, to me, I don't understand it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, sure. Thanks for that call.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that speaks to the complexities of this conversation. You know, when we face challenges in national conversations about LGBT folks, it's very much we're reducing folks to this one identity, very much in the same way the arguments against us are focusing. And, you know, someone else had mentioned this earlier, cherry picking certain components of a text or an idea.
Brenda is in Orange Park. Go ahead, Brenda. Thanks for holding.
Hi. Well, first of all, I just want to send love out to all the family and friends of the victims of these murders. And that's a sad situation.
Yes, it is.
On the issues all the way around, I'm a Christian, I'm a homosexual, I'm a lesbian. I have friends on both sides. I have enemies on both sides. Trouble comes at all creeds, colors, you know, the whole story. So someone mentioned to find a middle ground. Well, for decades I've been trying to find the middle ground, and the closest thing I can come to, and it's getting more obvious as the earth gets bigger in our face. Civil rights, everyone, I don't care who you are or what your religious beliefs are or who you worship or who you love, civil rights are being encroached upon on all of us, on our country, in the world. And if we lose our civil rights in America, there is no more human rights in this earth, on the earth, or in the world. So whoever's out there fighting for their civil rights, we need to say there is the like-mindedness that Jesus spoke about or Paul wrote about. To be of a like mind, we have that in common. We need to encourage the liberty and the salvation of civil rights, all of us. We're all different. We're never going to all be the same, but we can have some connection of like mind, and that should be love, number one. Thank you.
Thank you, Brenda. Yes, and I think this is an event conceived with love in mind. So with all of this said, a conversation on faith, race, and LGBTQ with the Reverend Dr. Jamie Washington is coming up Wednesday night, October 10th at 6 p.m. at UNF's University Center. People need to register?
Nope.
They can just show
it's
up.
It's free.
Which is the Jacksonville
up.
Way,
That's
baby.
Right.
Just show up at UNF 6 o'clock for this presentation. And thanks so much to Caitlin Legg and Matt Hartley with UNF's Interfaith Center. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks, Melissa.
Much more still ahead later. A bad day in KC for the Jaguars. Ooh. But up next, reducing violence in the city through the art and music of Jacksonville's young people. We'll tell you about We Rise next.
Many places in downtown Jacksonville being considered for demolition or redevelopment have had their histories lost. How can we bring these stories back to life while determining a future for these sites? WJCT, in partnership with Modern Cities, present The Jackson, Forgotten Spaces, Tuesday, October 23rd at WJCT Studios. The evening begins with a reception at 6, followed by a panel discussion at 6:30. RSVP for this free event at wjct.org/events. Sponsored in part by Downtown Investment Authority.
This is Ira Glass with This American Life, and I'm coming to Jacksonville to give a talk I call 7 Things I've Learned, which is basically just an excuse to tell a bunch of stories and play clips and play videos and talk about how we make our radio show and talk about stuff we have not put on the air and never will put on the air and just play stuff that it seemed like it would be fun to play for a crowd. It's Saturday, November 10th at Florida Theater. Sponsored by Community First Credit Union. Tickets at floridatheater.com. That's floridatheater.com.
Hi, I'm Andrew Wickman, host of Blues Horizon. The best in classic and modern blues is now on twice a week. Blues Horizon, Monday and Wednesday nights at 11, right here on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world, your music.
Welcome back. Creating change in response to the ongoing deadly gun violence in this city is a goal for many in Jacksonville. Well, activists on Jacksonville's historic east side are working on this, too. The first annual We Rise Festival is coming up this weekend on the east side. Its focus is on the art and voices of young people. Nicole Holderbaum and Nick Thompson are with We Rise Jax. Good morning to you both.
Hello. Good morning.
You know, this is great because nobody is surprised to hear that there is an ongoing concern about deadly gun violence in Jacksonville. We remain very dubiously Florida's murder capital, and we've had a spate of gun violence over the last year, and there are lots of people working on this. This is one way that people can lift up our young people. So, Nicole, let's start with you. Tell me about We Rise Jax and what's happening this weekend on the east side.
After the shooting at the Landing, something clicked inside my head, and I was just like, I can't hear these stories anymore. You know, I have to do something, and I have somewhat of a platform here that I've worked on building through my art, and so I decided to do an event. And I wanted to focus on the youth because I believe that in order to make a difference and make changes in our city, you have to invest in the younger generations. And then we decided to do the event on the east side because it's a community that I believe we should invest in. And there are youth in that community that I want to reach out to. And so we've organized over 30 local artists, a lot of young artists, over 30 performers, a lot of young performers, first-time readers of poetry, first-time singers, etc., a lot of cool vendors. The Block Skate Supply is setting up a street course for skateboarding, and the goal is to give the youth something to be a part of that is positive and creative, also provide them with a support system, a network, positive role models, and something that to show them that they can take different pathways in life that don't lead to violence and don't include violence.
Mm-hmm. Which is a message that we need to send. Now, Nick Thompson, you live over on the east side. The local kids mural project is going to be part of this. There will be live murals, I guess, painted during this whole event, among other things.
Among other things. And Nicole will be the one doing the live painting. If you get a chance, drive down A. Phillip and see the mural that her and several high schoolers did on the side of the Brotherhood building of Axe Handle Sunday. It's actually amazing.
Right. That's the thing. More people need to come to these neighborhoods and see what's happening because...
Yeah, especially the east side. There's a lot going on the east side now. One of our schools got turned into a magnet school. We have one of the smallest libraries in the city, but it's one of the most active libraries in the city, thanks to Sean, who's the director of it. in the afternoon, you can't even move in there because of the kids that are in there working on computers and doing their homework and things like this. And an event like this that Nicole is doing is just going to help bring more of the youth together and understand that they do have some abilities to do some things.
Sure. Because, you know, whether kids live on the east side or any part of town, you want them to be part of those, right?
Yeah, of course. This is very much a community event. Because I'm a very busy person. I have a lot on my plate, but I knew that it was important to do this. So the goal was to bring together a group of people that was like-minded and passionate about making a change. So we've had, we have our last meeting this tomorrow, actually tomorrow night at 7 p.m. at the Eastside Brotherhood, which is open to all. But we've had 5 meetings so far with about 50 people at each meeting, young artists, community members, et cetera, we've all been working together to make this event possible. So it's very much a team effort, and I think it's going to be a beautiful result.
You have painted murals, by the way, all over the city. People can go to your website, Nico Suave Art, like Rico Suave, right?
Yes.
Yeah. NicoSuaveArt.com to see more of your work. You've also done a lot of murals in Title I schools, around Duval County. So the Kids Mural Project really helps kids expand their portfolios. So you're really taking your talent and trying to extend it to younger people in this way. And your art is so public. Anyone can drive around and look at it, which is really cool.
Yeah, I think it's important to have public art in our city. And I think arts and culture is one of the most important things about a city. So I think investing in the youth and young artist is a very important thing. The Kids Mural Project isn't specifically targeting creative youth. Its goal is to empower all youth. So when we go to these schools, which we've been to 30 schools here in Duval County and painted murals with over 3,000 kids, the goal is to empower them by allowing them to design the mural and putting their ideas on the wall, and then I just facilitate it. So the goal is to just show them that they're capable of things that they never even thought about before and just open their mind to the possibilities. And then the concepts that we paint on the wall are quotes that they read every day and they see every day that remind them about the conversations that we've had and to remember what they're capable of.
That is such a great way to put it. Now, Nick, tell me a little bit more about We Rise Jax, because this is the first annual festival. But you're planning more work in the area, right? There's more happening.
I would have to have Nico talk about that more than anything, because this is her baby. I'm just the old guy in the room. Trust me. I am the old guy in the room. I sit in these meetings, and it's like, oh, Lord, I am so old. But for someone like me, it's exhilarating to see the younger generation stepping up and saying, okay, we need to do something for the one that's behind us. Because we kind of lost that for a while. And it's been really fun and really interesting to see it evolve from the idea that she had to what's going to happen this Saturday. So I'm really hoping people will come out and have a lot of fun.
That's right. Come on out to the first annual We Rise Festival at 915 A Philip Randolph Boulevard this Saturday. Dozens of visual artists and performance artists. They're going to be closing streets. There'll be food trucks, raffles, all the fun festival stuff. Anyone can come to promote peace and art in the city. Anything else people need to know? What time does it start?
It starts at 11 a.m. And I guess anything else that people need to know is that we need to be active in making a change in our city, because Jacksonville has a lot of potential. And I think if you come to We Rise this Saturday, you'll see it. You'll see the potential in the young performers and the young artists. And they're all very passionate and dedicated about investing in their city and investing in themselves. So please come out and support them and support making a change.
Thanks.
And I'd like to add just one thing, is that when we unveiled the mural on the Brotherhood of X Handle Sunday, the diversity of the people who came to that unveiling was amazing. You had old, young, white, black. It was a really moving experience. It was hot, but it was a moving experience.
Like so many events in this city. Well, again, it's the We Rise Festival. APR, Saturday, 11 a.m. Come on out and you'll be amazed. Thanks so much, Nico and Nick Thompson. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Melissa.
We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Mayor Lenny Curry. You know 630 City? It's the familiar place you go when you need to know. During severe weather conditions, our 630 City Call Center operates around the clock, equipping citizens with information they may need to make decisions and resolve issues. Be sure to add their number, 630 City, to your favorites, and remember to pick up a 2018 Hurricane Preparedness Guide from your neighborhood public library. Be Jack's ready.
Discover new music at the Electro Lounge Monday through Saturday nights at 9, only on 89.9 FM. We've got your chill. Tune in and enjoy fresh music from around the world.
Well, the Phase 8 Theater Company is doing amazing, innovative live theater productions right here in our WJCT studios. You can just come downtown to WJCT and see some great theater. And they've got a great show coming up. It's celebrating Hispanic identity. It's called Yo Soy Latino Showcase. Our own WJCT employee, Carlos Semide, is starring in this show, and he's got a preview for us. Good morning. ¿Cómo está?
Very good. Thank you very much. And kudos on that pronunciation. You know,
did I get that right?
Yes, that's before the first piña colada was served. So,
you know, it might not be a bad idea to serve those more regularly here in Studio 5. I think the Hoda and Kathy Lee way makes a lot of sense to me. I think that could be good. Anyway,
I'm going to put that in the suggestion box.
Yeah, please
right
do
away.
So. Yes. Okay. So you're in the show, and this is going to be a lot of fun because this is an exploration of Hispanic identity.
Exactly. And Phase 8, you know, their motto is pushing the boundaries of performance. And what they've done is something I think is very unique. They've taken the works of many different emerging and new playwrights in Hispanic community. And we're going to act out scenes. And some of them, you know, you're like John Leguizamo or even Miguel Pinedo, who wrote Short Eyes. But some others like Nilo Cruz, who wrote a play, Anna in the Tropics, you may not know. But that one actually won a Pulitzer Prize. And so we've taken these different scenes, some dramatic, some funny, some very, you know, introspective. And we're going to act them out.
Nice.
And they're great. And we have some music, too. We have a beautiful dancer that also performs. And so we have a wonderful mix. And my character is Juan Julián Ríos. He's a lector. And lectors were orators in the tradition of Cuba, where in cigar factories, while, you know, they roll cigars, while they work, while the craftsmen design things and really fine-tune things, the orators, the lectors would read. And, you know, this was in the 20s and the 30s. Long before playlist and music.
So they would entertain the cigar rollers.
Exactly. And
that was before Spotify, right?
And Juan Julián Ríos is the lector that is commissioned to come to Ybor City
Tampa.
Exactly. And to read out to them. But he didn't just read, you know, like comics or like Fiorello LaGuardia reading the Sunday comics. He read things like, you know, the classics and poems of love. He read Anna Karenina. And so he's a very dapper gentleman, very very kind, but also a romantic figure as well. And so I love the first scene when I come out, and today I bought my prop. So for the benefit of radio, I've got my walking stick.
You've got a walking stick and a sword in here.
Oh, yes.
What's the sword for?
Well, besides the skewing the olives later, but they'll be in one scene where we have we depict the mother company, country, Spain. And so this is for a sword from Spain.
If there were anyone in this building who I would say who would look totally normal and natural carrying a gold encrusted scabbard, it would be you, Carlos Semide.
I actually have a photograph of me when I visited Spain. I visited Toledo. That's where all the ceremonial swords are made. And it's a beautiful city. It's a walled city, actually, and very ancient. I remember one time I was there and I really wanted something cold to drink. Well, all these streets are made of stone, narrow slits of windows in the cathedrals. And I went to this one dusty shop, kind of like the dusty shop that they visit in Gremlins. And I asked, may I have something cold to drink? And this man came from behind the bar with a froth mug of beer. He was the one man in touch with the 20th century. Well, this is from Spain, and that's for another scene. It's really a lot of fun doing these rehearsals because the director, Ariana Rodriguez, has put together a wonderful collection of stories. And if you, it's just like visiting
and
the library.
And she just happened to walk in right now. How about that? Why don't you pull that mic close to
you? Yes, ma'am.
Okay, so we've been listening to Carlos talk about Yo Soy Latino Showcase. He's in some of the scenes, but this is a way to really look at a lot of facets of Hispanic identity, right?
Yes, ma'am. That's the main part of the show that I wanted to showcase Hispanic culture to, you know, people who might not know a lot about it, and also just promote Spanish culture, you know, so all Hispanic people can come to the show and just be very proud of, you know, where they come from and their roots.
Exactly. And, you know, this is something that, say, if you live in South Florida or even Central Florida, it's a much more prominent part of the local culture. Here in Jacksonville, it's been smaller, but it's growing.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. And how do you see that affecting what you're doing with this production?
I just really want more people to know that there's stuff out there for us to do as Hispanics. There's a whole lot of stuff in the community that is happening. It's small, but it's growing, but there's more things for us to do. And I think my main thing is for Hispanic actors to feel more comfortable coming out and auditioning, because it was one of the challenges of the show, finding Hispanic actors to feel comfortable coming out to this audition. So I think that's one of my main things, is having people feel free that they can go and be a part of the artistic community here in Jacksonville.
Right, exactly. Of course, Carlos could probably do almost every part, but you do need more than Carlos. So, so it's Yo Soy Latino Showcase, and it's coming up here in our building, WJCT Studios. Phase 8 Theater Company does productions right here in our studios. Just go to phase8.org to look at the schedule that they have coming up all through the year. And these performances for Yo Soy Latino are coming up Friday and Saturday night, correct? Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
All right.
And they'll be right here. I just love the different parts that were chosen, the different pieces. I mean, they weren't something that you could just turn on the radio and hear. They entered the tropics. Yeah.
And they're intentional.
And they're fantastic.
Yeah, so come on out collection. And get some Latin flavor at WJCT this weekend. Have a great show, guys. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having us.
In a moment, Cole Pepper, he's back from Kansas City. Not a good weekend for the Jaguars. We'll tell you about it next.
When oil prices were low like they were a couple of years ago, drillers in Kansas pretty much just started shutting things down.
Everybody thought it would be over in a couple, you know, 10, 11 months. But once it hit that first year and then second year, it was tough.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Oil is low no longer, and the whole Kansas economy stands to benefit. That's next time on Marketplace. Weeknights at 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
In Massachusetts, a segment of the criminal justice system that's completely out of view.
They're in a private conference room, little public notice, and if the magistrate decides the case won't proceed, the case is completely closed.
More on so-called show cause hearings with the Boston Globe Spotlight team. That's next time on The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI.
Weekdays at 2 on 89.9 WJCT.
The distinctive Mediterranean look of Coral Gables is largely due to the influence of George Merrick. I'm Ben Brotmarkle, and coming up on Florida Frontiers, the weekly radio magazine of the Florida Historical Society, we'll talk with Merrick biographer Arva Moore Parks. We'll discuss historic Sanborn fire insurance maps and talk about Ernest Hemingway's six-toed cats. That's Florida Frontiers, Monday evening at 6:30 on 89.9 WJCT.
And now, there are nine. Brett Kavanaugh's nomination to the Supreme Court divided the country, and the battle for many was as much personal as it was political. What, if anything, did we learn? And what changes now? Next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Finally, this hour, did you watch the game? Ouch, the Jags get barbecued over the weekend in Kansas City. Yes, it was one of those Sundays. So, Culpepper, not your usual theme song this morning. Yeah. Good to see you.
I'm not sure we can necessarily call it a season-ending loss. It was a bit of a massacre, though.
A bloody Sunday, yes.
Yeah, I would call it a season-altering loss.
Okay.
Because now what happens after the 30-14 loss to the Chiefs, it really turns the focus of the season for the Jaguars. Rather than saying, all right, now we're competing for a home field advantage, now they're looking at, all right, how can we get back on track? How can we turn things around against the Cowboys next week? Mm-hmm. How can we make sure that this sort of performance doesn't crop up again? Any team can have a bad day at the office. You start having multiples of those, and you have to start changing how you're going to view things. There were a lot of answers for why it happened after the game. I talked to Barry Church, the Jaguar safety in the locker room in Kansas City, and clearly a guy who was trying to make sure to keep an even keel, as he typically does, but not pleased with the performance.
You never want to lose in the NFL at all, but you never want to lose to a divisional opponent in the AFC. They came to play today, and the better team won today. I mean, they outplayed us, so we got to give credit where credit is due. They outplayed us today, but just got to get better.
Does this game change your expectations for this quarter or for the rest of the year?
No, it's just let us know that, if we do get another chance against KC, that we got to play better. But all our goals are still in set for the season, so we just got to keep working towards those.
Now, again, just 5 weeks in, so 11 more games to go, so things can certainly change over the course of the next couple of months. But if the Jaguars do face Kansas City again, it would be in the playoffs, and it would almost certainly be in Kansas City, because right now there's a three-game gap between the Chiefs and the Jaguars, when you include the tiebreaker that the Chiefs have. Blake Bortles needs to play better, 4 interceptions, including his 13th career pick 6, and the offensive line's got to be better. There are injuries to deal with. Just not a very good day. Rained most of the morning in Kansas City. My saving grace was that I was still stuffed full of barbecue from lunch the prior day.
You know, you're a guy who's known around town for your awesome barbecue. It's no surprise you're from that area, Kansas City. internationally renowned for its awesome barbecue. So mm-hmm. where did you go for barbecue?
I went to the place that Anthony Bourdain said was one of the 13 places you should eat before you die.
Oh, man.
Joe's KC. It's a barbecue joint in a gas station, an operating gas station.
Oh, wow.
We stood in line for about an hour and 10 minutes before ordering, which is pretty much normal that that time of day for lunch. And yeah, it was good.
It was good stuff.
Good doesn't sell it. It was fantastic.
Well, I'm glad at least you had a good weekend. The team didn't, but you did.
Exactly.
Okay, so they're next up at Dallas, as you said. And Gators, meanwhile, up to number 14. They beat LSU over the weekend.
Huge win for the Gators. LSU was ranked number 5 going into the game. And for Florida, it really is clear that they are on the right path. Dan Mullen has done a tremendous job in Gainesville. Any questions that were lingering about whether that was the right guy to hire, I think, have been put to the side. He has the Gators heading in the right direction, and now they'll take on Vandy this week. Mm-hmm. After that, it's a bye week, and then the Florida-Georgia game. So things certainly looking like it's going to be a very intriguing Florida-Georgia game this year. Georgia, by the way, still number 2 in the country after they whipped Vandy on Friday. They are at LSU this week. Always a tough place to play. They're in Death Valley, but if they can get out of there with a win, things can be very interesting for that game here in Jacksonville.
I just got an invitation to the Florida, not the game, not the Florida-Georgia game, mm-hmm. but a party about the game. I think it's called Cleats and Cocktails or something like that.
Well, yeah. as I was explaining to some people who are tailgating in Kansas City, this is, you know, in Kansas City, they tailgate around every Chiefs game, and it's a huge event. In Jacksonville, of course, we know that the tailgating capital of the South is that Florida-Georgia game.
Yeah.
It's sort of a social event that happens to have a football game played at the
exactly,
end of it.
Exactly, exactly. And, of course, it surrounds this building, WJCT, so we always look forward to seeing it spring up and all the merriment and fun and craziness that happens. So always good to see you, meanwhile, every Monday. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Melissa.
Follow Cole on Twitter, at Cole Pepper, for all your sports news and notes. And that's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Merchart. Michelle Corum runs the board. Our theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. And if you missed anything this morning, make sure to catch our rebroadcast tonight at 8 o'clock. 1A is up next. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is 89.9. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great Monday.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.